Hey everybody, this is Daryl with AfterBuzz TV. I was recently looking to buy a car and thought to myself, there has to be a better way. It's such a stressful process. That's when my friend told me about a new way to buy a car. It's called TrueCar.com. At TrueCar.com, you can actually see what others pay for the car you're looking for in your area, so you know when you're getting a great price. Because at TrueCar.com, you get a savings certificate, and you just take that savings certificate to a TrueCar.com certified dealer, so you don't need to worry about the hassle and anxiety of the old way to buy a car. And TrueCar.com users save an average of $3,000 off the MSRP. So seriously, if you're ready to buy a car, why wouldn't you go to TrueCar.com? Negotiation-free guaranteed savings, a hassle-free experience, and a TrueCar certified dealer that is committed to a new and better way to buy a car. Come on, save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Mad Men After Show.
Hey there, Mad Men fans. How are you? You know what time it is. You're here at AfterBuzz TV because you want to check out our Mad Men After Show for the mid-season finale. I refuse to call it a season finale because this is all one season split over 2 years. Who knows why?
I guess it really depends on how you define the word season.
It's true. Season 7, Episode 7, Waterloo. I'm Matt Lieberman. The whole panel's here. Joe Braswell's here.
I'm Joe Braswell.
Yes. Joseph Sanfilippo's
here. Nice to be here with you guys.
Sterling Cates is here.
Hello.
And just what a staggering achievement I think this episode was. Like, one of the finest episodes that Mad Men will ever air. A really, really standout episode of television. I just was gripped from moment one. And, you know, the ending we'll get into further on. You know, some people really love it. Some critics were very underwhelmed. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Please reach out to us on Twitter and on YouTube and iTunes and so on. But you know, let's start at the beginning. It's where you're supposed to start, with Bert Cooper watching Apollo 11 take off. And this whole episode is centered around the moon landing, which, you know, like, ever since this series was first, you know, announced, whenever it first premiered, this has always been an event I feel like we've been building to. It's kind of like one of the last major capstones of the most eventful decade, you know, in recent American history.
And I do like the way Mad Men's known for sort of like taking these historic events and sort of building, not too gratuitously, but building these episodes around these wonderful historic events. And it does feel like that one of the last major events of a very eventful year, historic year, 1969, was the moon landing. It doesn't get bigger than that. So I feel like I'm missing something that may come later, but I don't know. So,
well, we got 6 months left on our show to see it, or 5 months, because they're in July now. So we have until the end of 1969, leading up into 1970. Of course, Bert Cooper, who tragically passes away in this episode. And I don't know how, but so many critics pegged it before the episode aired.
Really?
I had no idea. So many critics predicted that Bert Cooper was going to die. Everything else, you know, was kind of up in the air. But a lot of them pegged Bert Cooper as passing away. I didn't see it coming. And I'm kind of really shocked at how affected I was at his passing. And it's kind of it's really, really beautiful, not skipping too far ahead, but that he watches the moon landing and his final words, bravo, and then he passes. The passing of the old guard is this moment which united, you know, people around the country and around the globe in seeing what our species was capable of and where we could possibly go in the future, and to have someone who was decidedly old guard pass on at the same time is kind of
seeing that moment.
Yeah.
I took that bravo, though, as more of like just an old advertising guy, like acknowledging saying the right thing at the right time. It was just sort of this whole thing of like just like well done with that, with the line, not right. With the, you know, one small step for man, when Jet Li for Mankind. I feel like that was a bravo, like, oh, that was a
good line.
You know? Like, that's what I got.
Like, way to stick the landing
exactly.
on
strong. I thought it was definitely a very Bert thing to say, bravo, because mm-hmm. yes. not many people use that.
At the risk of being argumentative, actually, it came out years later, Neil Armstrong misquoted it. We pre-wrote sure. that line, and it was yeah. a small step for mankind.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, we're just worth pointing out that if you know,
I don't know if it was, but I'll take it.
Let me throw things at him.
In any case, we're going to get into the moon landing a bit further on in the show. I want to talk about where everyone is emotionally at the top of the show. We've got Ted Shaw, who we haven't really seen much this year. He's just been kind of moping around the California office. You know, earlier in the season, I maybe would have pegged it on having given up Peggy. And this whole romance that he had in exchange for family security, even when he wasn't really happy in that marriage. But it also appears to be he's just kind of over the grind. He's over advertising. He's where Don maybe was in season 6 when he kind of broke down.
Yeah.
Well, in Los Angeles, I feel like Ted is so irrelevant, and that's mm-hmm. contributing to his depression.
Yeah,
no, I think The Office has a lot to do with it too. I mean, that office looks like a used car lot. It just looks like the office you go into when you bought a car at Jim's, and you went in the back, and that was his like yeah. his prefab office.
To me, it's like an old school dental office. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Awful. Well, it's also like what Don so brilliantly said at the end, which I think that was Don's speech actually mm-hmm. when he did it at the end, which yeah. is fantastic. But yeah, I mean, so, look. California works well in some people, like Pete, and not so well in other people. Some people are New Yorkers that just can't. Sometimes it doesn't fit. You know, I've seen mm-hmm. New Yorkers come here all the time and just like they don't, they can't yeah. do it. Don's one of those people. Obviously, Ted's one of those people. Like he needs to be in New York, being creative, and not.
He needs to be plugged in and working all yeah. the time. The yeah. city that never sleeps.
Yeah,
you know. So he's flying. We haven't seen him fly since last year, and he's with the Sun-Kissed executives, and he just cuts the
Stop
engines
the engine.
And just ruminates on dying. Yeah. And they are freaked yeah. out.
Can you imagine anything more terrifying? I don't know if you've ever been in a little Cessna yeah. like that, because they are so small. Like, yeah. it is unbelievable how small they are. And it's kind of like a miracle you got three people in it in the first place, plus the dude next to you is a big dude. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so to start with, you're scared. And when you're in a little plane like that, you don't have the security of a huge jumbo jet. You're already in a nervous, tenuous feeling place. And then you're looking at the guy, and you realize he's not wearing a uniform. He's not really a pilot.
He could all die right now.
Kind of a pilot.
And yeah. he's looking pretty disheveled. It's yeah. to his hair is musty.
And you're doing business with him. You know he's an advertising guy right. who has a hobby. So you're nervous to begin with. And then he cuts the engine. Oh, God.
Yeah, and he's talking about how great it would be to have all your problems just go away.
Right,
perhaps evaporate in a huge fireball.
Well, and a shout out to my hometown. My mother lives there, Claremont. Claremont got a shout out in there. So
did yeah. Claremont get? Oh,
well, he said that's what Fireball's going to be.
Oh yeah, Ryan Claremont.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm like, look out, Mom.
Yeah. So Ted's not happy. He calls or Jim calls him with Pete on the other end of the phone, fuming. And you know, Jim basically letting him know, you know, the Sun-Kissed executives, they weren't happy about that. They're really not happy about it, Ted. And Ted lets Jim know that he intends to resign and that Jim's going to have to buy up his shares and that there's no talking about it. Click.
Click. Done. Yeah.
And we don't see him again until the end of the episode. So Harry Crane, he's being promoted to partner due to the events of this season, and he's haggling over his contract.
Poor Harry Crane.
Not poor Harry Crane, because like the more I think about it, Harry has always been a weasel. He has. He's always been a weasel. He always says the wrong thing at the wrong time.
But he's been ascendant, though. Like he's
well. That's because you fail upwards.
No, I think he's been prescient. He was ahead on TV. He was ahead on television buys, on mm-hmm. tie-ins, and the computer. I think he's been pretty well ahead of everybody else. Yeah. And I think the problem is he's just people don't like him. I think it's that simple. They're like,
well,
I would love for
likeable.
You to eat it.
Right.
One of the recaps, I think it might have been the Time one, I'm not sure, that said that he's the Jerry Gergich of Parks and Rec. Yeah.
So true.
I thought that was so true. I couldn't have described it better myself.
Yeah. You're right. That was Time. Yeah.
That's
Time.
Yeah, except Jerry has never, you know, described someone's wife in, like, horrifying detail after a Zooby Zooby Zoo performance.
Right. That we know of.
Yes. In any case, he's haggling on his contract. He asked Don for some advice.
Said, you know, sign it, stupid.
Sign it. Don't haggle. Sign it. And if he had just taken that advice, he'd be sitting pretty on top of $1.5 million in 1969.
That's a bummer.
So $7 million of U.S. Of grown up today money.
Pow! Nice chunk of change. Too bad, Harry. Snooze, you lose.
Zigged when you should have zagged, my man.
Yeah. So where's the Don in all of this? He comes into the office after the day after the Apollo 11 launches, and Meredith has some very bad news. And I love the character of Meredith. We've been debating about whether or not she's been in the office before this season, but I don't remember her having lines before this year. And she's like taken it on herself to be like Don's like secret wife. Like she kind of sees this like odd romantic relationship where there isn't one.
I will be your strength.
Yes.
I just feel like that's Matthew Weiner having fun with it. This is the last season. And she kind of comes out of nowhere with this move on Don that was...
Yeah.
You know, that's happened a lot, though. Sometimes in the workplace it happens. You have this, you know, especially then you have this sort of, you know, one side, one person seeing it one way, the other person seeing it another way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for Meredith, I mean, this was like, duh, like we've had a thing this whole time. So
hello.
How could you not?
Now, yeah. It's time for me to be here for you.
Exactly.
Let's here's the kiss
I am
that you
strength.
Need.
Yes.
Yes. Now that you're fired, we can finally kiss. So we can finally be together.
So she delivers
the look on Don's face
of just like
it's so funny
when she grabs his face and turns it. He's like, what? and then like you know we've never really seen him deny a kiss.
I've
so
never
perfectly.
Seen him turn down any woman
and so gracefully. He was like, we
can't do this.
We can't do this.
You this is not a thing.
Not now.
Not now.
Not now.
yes. So she delivers this breach of contract letter, which, like, right. we've been waiting for weeks because he's breached
That's
his contract, like,
eight
five ways,
ways
to Sunday.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, Don, of course, is furious, and he storms into Cutler's office in the middle of a meeting, of course, and Cutler's like, oh, this is Don Draper. He has
Get out.
A habit of breaking into meetings that he shouldn't be at. And, you know, Jim is like the cat that ate the canary. Like, it's almost like a Dr. Claw situation where he's like, I see you got my note.
Well, you know what I love about the way he plays that? It almost seems like he's on the Asperger's spectrum somewhere, like at the very, very end.
Oh, definitely.
Like, he plays him just like there's a little bit of just like that last scene. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, he doesn't seem like he's quite in the flow with everybody else.
Shout out to Harry Hamlin, man.
Oh, yeah. So good.
So good.
He's so great on the show.
He did turn into a bit of a supervillain in that sequence. But yeah, him reading Don the Riot Act and finally telling him, like, you're just a football bully.
You're a football player in a suit.
Yeah.
You want to take a swing at me? That was just well done. You can see the simmering anger there.
It was really beautiful. And, of course, Don isn't going to take it. He says, you know, you made that meeting specifically trying to boot me out of the agency in a different way. What was I supposed to do? I couldn't not go. So he takes it to Roger. Roger, of course, hasn't seen it yet. And it's suddenly just this gathering of partners in the middle of the office.
I got to tell you, that was one of those moments where, as a grown man, roughly Don's age, I don't know what I would have done. And I certainly would not have done what he did. I wouldn't have had the wherewithal. Those are those moments where I'm like, God, that makes you... It's an awesome character.
I tell you this, buddy. But you're no Don Draper.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm sorry,
and it's
Joe.
Like he knows what to do. Like, what do you do when this happens?
Yeah.
Some of us would just break down and be like, oh, crap. No.
Yeah.
Everybody out of the office.
Yeah. You're not taking me out of my own company.
Not happening.
Not
Everybody
happening.
Out.
And I got to tell you, this is we've been calling for this for, I don't know, two seasons now. But like, the whole, when is Don coming back? Don's back.
Yeah.
And he's back. And he doesn't have to be betting a bunch of women, as some of us called for, boozing it up heavily. But like, everything we saw in this episode from that moment was like, oh, I was just the cheering that we were waiting for. Like, it's like, get you out, you here. Like, that was like, yeah, Don.
Boom, boom, boom,
but
boom,
at the same time, though, there's a definite change in how he approaches other people and how he approaches the work. A lot of the ego is gone. It's not, you can't kick me out of my company because I built this company. It's like, I built this company, and I want to be here to help it thrive. Not, you know, like, I'm essential to it, but, like, I don't want to leave, and I don't want to leave these people.
Yeah.
And his scene with Roger later on, I think, reinforces that fact.
Sure.
But...
Another great scene.
Well, one thing I think is very really interesting that this episode really brings out, and it really locks it in by the end, is that these are all people now with money that don't need to be working. that are choosing to work. And I think it's interesting that Matthew Weiner, thank you for that. It's interesting to me that he views that this is a value that is worth exploring. That mm-hmm. you have the money,
yeah.
you are in the place we all think we'd like to be, and if we get there, everything will be fine. And they're still choosing to struggle and thrive and fight.
Yeah.
And it's been that way with Bert and Roger for years, and with Don for years, but everybody else now too. And it's really interesting.
It's a realization, especially for guys like Don and Ted, that it's not, and even Roger to a certain extent, it's not about the money. It is about the work. It's about the,
well,
drive.
Well, I mean, without jumping too far ahead, the best things in life are free.
Yeah,
guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Love it.
And we're going to get more into that. So, you know, Don, he thinks he's fired. He thinks he's out. They try to have an impromptu vote right there in the middle of the office. And it's Joan, Cutler, and Ted versus Don, Roger, Pete, and Bert. Bert, who still thinks that he's a pain in the ass, but he's on his team.
Yeah.
So,
I don't love how against Joan it is to Don. Still don't like that.
Well, we finally got a firm reason this week. We're reminded that Don cost her $1 million.
$1.5 million.
It
was $1.5 million?
It was just a straight million when the company was going to go public.
Which is worth $7 million in today's money. So,
yes.
Right.
So a lot of money. And, you know, I've been reading a lot of reviews, and one of the things that came up in a couple of them, and I just want to address, is that Joan seems to have, you know, put aside a lot of her moral beliefs in favor of money, perhaps just because she thinks that she's owed it for everything she's given this company. And on some level, maybe is she valuing money that she, you know, is owed her over people, over Don?
I mean, maybe. I think it's also, I mean, coming from where she, we talked about touched on this last week, you know, coming from where she came from,
yeah,
sort of working very hard to get to where she is, I mean, she's not willing to, I mean, she's fighting very hard for that. And I think that we did all forget that $1 million. Like, that's, you know, she's got a son. She's mm-hmm. in that crappy apartment.
With her mom.
With her mom. She's trying to make, you know, she doesn't want to depend on a man. She already went through that, as we talked about last. So $1 million and Don's just swaggering around. Like, yeah, that's a grudge holding offense right there. I think so.
Absolutely.
Even though it did make me very upset. I'm like, come on, Joan.
Yeah,
but
I
do understand it.
But team.
But he gave us the nod, though, when she turns around to Jim and says, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
exactly. That's very, Joan's very much like, you know, I want him out of here, but you shouldn't have done that. That's going to be bad.
Yeah,
it was
a
low blow.
Dumb.
Yeah.
He pushed just a little too far. He could have been fine, but he had to upset the balance.
Yeah.
And then Roger found his inner Roger, you know, Sterling Sr., whoever his father was who founded this company with Bert. He found his inner leader.
Yes.
Bert, in his final act, challenges Roger. I keep getting ahead of myself,
yeah,
and
no,
I apologize to everyone. All right, before we get into Don and his divorce call, which is amazing, and Peggy and all the rest, I just want to talk quickly about iTunes. You know, folks, we really appreciate all your support for this show and for AfterBuzz TV. And if you are a fan, you're probably aware that episodes may not have been appearing on iTunes for the last couple of weeks. We had a small issue with our server, the people who were supposed to keep all of our episodes online. It has been resolved, and service will resume uninterrupted. And I'd like to apologize to those fans who, you know, were upset by that. It was out of our control. We did everything that we could to resume service, and everything should be back to normal as of this posting. I want to thank you all for your support and for continuing to watch and listen to our podcast. And if there's ever an issue in the future, not that there should be, you can always find our podcast on YouTube on the AfterBuzz TV channel.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Don, thinking that he's fired, he calls Megan, and it's kind of a nice parallel between Peggy's scene as she's trying to decide what to wear, and Don, he's looking at this suitcase, got a bunch of suits, he's thinking, and he gives Megan a call for, you know, just to check in or to maybe get some input or some, let her know that he's being fired again.
Who looked pretty darn happy on that balcony in Laurel Canyon in
sunbathing.
Reading the script. She looked pretty content.
You know? She's having a great day. She's going to go see The Wild Bunch with Jill.
Yeah, she's going to go to a movie.
Yeah.
Obviously.
And, you know, Don lets her know, you know, maybe I should see this as an opportunity. There's kind of like this weird, like, dual thing happening where he's saying, you know, I'm being let go. But maybe, you know, this will be good. Like, I don't have to work with them anymore, but I can move on. And this is an opportunity. And it's signaling what's about to come, this divorce talk, which is so beautifully underwritten. Mm-hmm. So you don't need much. Because we've had this whole season to explore why their marriage was definitely going to end. Yeah. And why they both, for their own reasons, wanted out.
Right.
You know, Megan especially.
Yeah, we talked about it last week, the fondue pot.
Yeah, the fondue pot.
Final straw about that fondue pot.
So... No, I agree. Very, very wonderfully underwritten and really affecting. I'm not ashamed to admit. I teared up, you know, I got a little misty about three times in this episode, and that one really affected me. Just that, you know, that moment, like sort of knowing, but not having to say anything, and also the acceptance by both of them. And she's just kind of like quiet and pours a glass of wine.
It's the I'm here. When she says I'm here, that was to me, that was the end of it.
It's like, man.
He's like, hello? And it's that.
I'm here. I heard you.
I mean, it was so, and that was so, I mean, for those of us who've had, you know, that whole thing happen time to move on. And that moment on that phone, that is a legit real thing.
Yeah.
And that long pause can kill you.
It was affecting. And then,
he asked her, you know, do you want me to move out there? Is that what you want? Done.
She pours a glass of wine.
Mm-hmm.
Crickets.
Here.
My heart was like, oh. Yeah. And I thought it was mercifully underwritten because when she poured that glass of wine, I was like, oh, here we go. I can't go through a painful, long ordeal on this phone. And it was perfect.
But it's like, do we really have to say it? Do we really have to say it out loud? And he said, well, I'll always take care of you. She's like, you don't owe me anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just go.
I'll be okay. Because, well, until you are, I'll be
right.
here.
Yeah.
It's just really sweet.
And I love the dynamic between the two of them. Like you said, she looked very good on the balcony.
Understatement.
And he looked a little shabby. You know, he was tired, and his shirt was rumpled up, and he was sitting there with his collar open and kind of looking like who he is, a middle-aged ad guy. Mm-hmm. You know, good-looking middle-aged ad guy, but still. Middle-aged man.
Sure. Right.
And here's the gorgeous woman on the balcony in Laurel Canyon, and there's a very different universes.
Yeah. The, you know, artificial zenith of his life, like the zenith of life, let's say, compared to everyone else on the planet, has probably passed.
Yeah.
He's on the wrong side of 40, and things are potentially could just get worse.
You need to be very slow and easy about that wrong side of what.
Well, take it easy, pal.
Yeah, sorry.
Look over your left shoulder. Got the wrong side of somewhere.
No, just like in comparison to the other people in the rat race chasing the cheese, the same way that he has. But potentially things are looking up by the end of this episode. Just a great, great scene. Okay, I want to talk about.
It's one more thing. But it was oddly freeing for Don because I feel like, you know, all this, you know, garbage about, you know, him and Megan, which was great for him, but it's sort of artificial. And even the Peggy Don was, Betty, thank you. Betty Don was artificial to a certain extent. Now it's like he's sort of free to be Don and sort of live his creative life, and that was very evident as we saw the back half of that episode. But so it was also a moment of like, look, let Megan be happy on the balcony with reading her scripts and seeing the Wild Bunch in a bikini, and you go be Don Draper. It's not that bad. I felt that too.
He realizes in his pitch to Ted, we see it, you know, written outright that work is what drives him. Mm-hmm. He needs to work. It doesn't matter where he works, but he needs to work. That's why he gets out of bed in the morning, you know. And it's creative fulfillment versus, you know, any particular partner that's going to give him, you know, what he's always wanted, perhaps. I mean, he still has a lot of introspective journey to go in the back half of the season, and we're going to talk about our predictions for that later on. So, Peggy, right? She comes home to a strange, swarthy, handsome man in her apartment, doing up her ceiling.
Yes.
And he's sweaty.
Yeah.
He's very sweaty.
He is sweaty.
It's hot.
Swarthy.
I like swarthy.
Right? he's definitely been in it. And, you know.
The ceiling.
Yeah. He gives her his number. She's like, hey, listen, man, I'm not going to pay you unless you finish the job. He's like, whoa. If Kaz can't do anything for you, just let me know. Small jobs.
And that was that cool moment where she was obviously a little smitten when she saw him. But then when he goes, oh, you live alone. And then that's when she like got to her defensive mode. Like, well, I'm not going to pay you. Like, I'm capable. That's when she got to that mode. And he's like, no, it's my number. Like, oh. Okay.
and it was neat on a couple levels. Like, number one, here's a good looking guy, and she enjoyed that. But it was also that, you know, you own the building, and I'm not going to judge that you're a woman who owns the building. I don't care about that. I just need some work. So if you need some help, call me up. I'll be happy to help.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the beginning, middle, end of the conversation. And she had that moment of satisfaction. Like, that is it. Okay. Mm-hmm. I own the building.
Yeah. That's
also,
it.
There's also that weird sort of insider awkward moment where he's like, oh, your son. She's like, my son? How do you know about that? I mean, yeah. No. Oh, this guy? No.
Yeah, no, that's
well, let's talk about her relationship with Julio, right? Because we've kind of seen this on the periphery this season. She's got this neighbor whose son comes and hangs out and watches TV with her. And it's, in a way, it's touching on this maternal side of her that long since has been extinguished.
Right.
In the wake of giving up her baby.
Well, Julio is about the same age as what her son would be now, right? About,
roughly. I mean, it was, she
like
would have had...
filling that void. That
yeah, she would have had her baby in late 1960. It's 1969 now. So, yeah, about 8, 9 years old.
And I think it's also her realizing the sacrifices that mothers have to make when he says his mother doesn't love him. Mm-hmm. And then she says, no, you're moving because she loves you.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
she understood that maternal sacrifice that she made, and that's why she gets teary.
Yeah.
That's what I got from it.
Do you think this is her coming to terms with it, or do you think that maybe this has awakened a potential curiosity about what happened to her child?
Well, one of the things I really love about a well-written show is that sometimes the characters don't know why they're doing something.
Yeah.
Sometimes the characters aren't actively aware that this has become a maternal outlet for me, or this is because I care about this kid far more than the neighbor downstairs landlord relationship should be.
Yeah.
And it's because I have this hole. And so I love the way that worked out, because she came to that realization as she's holding him and petting his hair and she's crying. Like, she, you know, even if she realizes it, I don't know if she does, but like that to me is such a well-written moment and mm-hmm. such a well-acted moment, because this is, I want you here instinctually. I don't necessarily know why.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that there's a little bit of, God, I hope that my child has someone like me mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah.
Maybe. Oh, yeah.
For sure.
And I hope that someday they understand why I did what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think it's a very moving moment, and I'm very, very curious to see where this spins Peggy off. I mean, obviously, it's not as significant as her career success later on in the episode, but a very, very touching, significant moment, I think.
Absolutely. Agree.
Yeah. So everybody boards the plane on the way to Indianapolis to go pitch Burger Chef, and you know, Harry and Peggy are sitting there. They extinguish their cigarettes, and you know, Peggy crosses herself as they're about to take off, and Harry's like, "What'd you do that for?" Now I'm freaking out. And then we go up to Don and Pete a few rows ahead, and you know, Pete's pitching out this like pie in the sky vision of what's gonna happen. You know, like, hey, you know, we're gonna make sure you're gonna be sticking around. Okay, we're gonna get this Burger Chef thing. You are the king of the pitch, you know, and everything is gonna be just fine. And then, you know, hey, why don't you could probably move out to California, you know, we could do a whole thing. And Don's like, there's no reason for me to come out to California. And it always, it's like, it's embarrassing. It's hard to, like, the first time you're telling someone that a long relationship is over, there aren't quite the words.
Well, again, that scene was just also beautifully underwritten. It's just mm-hmm. Don, he's like, well, how's Megan? Megan doesn't want to talk about Megan. And mm-hmm. he looks over like, and gives
him
a look. Pete loves that wonderful line, marriage is a racket.
Yeah.
Which I just, like, right to the commercial, I just laughed at the commercials.
Love it.
It was wonderful.
Okay, so meanwhile, the Francis residence is having guests.
Yes.
For a chance. It is Carolyn, who is one of Betty's old college friends, and her family. And she's got two boys who are named Neil and Sean. Sean, the big strapping one, and Neil, you know, the sweet nerdy guy.
Didn't it look for a second like Betty wanted to eat Sean? Didn't it?
In the
kitchen?
The shirtless?
Yeah.
And just a little bit.
Tells him to call her by her first name.
Yeah.
Betty.
It's Betty. It's Betty.
Why wouldn't she? Like, he's a good-looking boy.
And, you know, Sally, of course, has the same reaction. Yes. Like, holy crap, that is in my house.
Yes.
And for the first time, you know, Sally, who I feel like kind of, like, shunned the, you know, the makeup and the hair and all the things that I think she attributes to her mother and how her mother derives her own happiness, now all of a sudden, with this guy in her orbit, she starts putting on lipstick.
She did the do. Now, I gotta say, that cannot be easy.
No.
And I would imagine the first time...
I don't even know how to do that.
How do you do that? First time you do that, and she didn't screw it up? That's impressive.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And then she's what? She's going to get into a pool and ruin it?
Well, you got to think, too, how long does that do take? You have to be in the bathroom. Nobody can come in here while I figure out how in the hell does this floppy thing happen. And then you got to get it just so with the hair.
Just for the 1 4-second brush by
in
that
the
she
kitchen.
Has in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt very much like this is Sally's all grown up episode. It was Sally's sort of like, you saw the hormones going, you saw everything else, which led up to the kiss later, which we'll talk about.
Yeah. So, you know, she's obviously got a thing for him, and Betty, to her credit, doesn't put a stop to things or doesn't overreact. She understands what it is, and I think she's honestly, in a perverse way, a little proud that Sally's taking an interest.
I was happy she didn't call her out in front of everyone.
Right?
Been really,
I thought that was going to happen, actually.
I did too, because I felt like Betty was a little jealous of Sally in that moment, that Sally could get this cute little boy and Betty can't.
But also, we've seen so much of Betty the Ice Queen, and you wonder, are there ways that, you know, Betty can connect and relate to her children, and this is one.
It.
It's always like, oh, well, I do have a girl, and I am Betty. I know to be a girl, so this is
well, cool. I think it's also reflective of where Betty's at, too, because if it was Fat Betty, I would imagine she'd have been hostile and angry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she's Hot Betty again, and Betty's a Betty. True.
And this scene has one of my favorite lines in the entire episode.
Why are you shaking your head at me?
It's his obsession with Fat Betty
versus
Hot Betty.
As if Fat Betty's this whole...
Wait a second. People feel good when they look good.
I know, but...
And all I'm saying
is... It's not universal.
All right, Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. In any case...
be careful there, pal.
This scene had one of my favorite lines in the whole episode. When Carolyn's like, I have to ask... Do you still talk to Don? Yeah. Like in this kind of like hushed, reverent tone still remembering the beefcake that she made.
He was hot.
Right. Yeah. right. And, you know, Betty says, no, I think of him less and less. And honestly, now I think of him as someone a teenage anthropologist would marry.
Yeah.
And that was just like the funniest, like most interesting way, I think, to describe her relationship. Granted, do we know if Betty had a degree in anthropology? Or like, or was working on one when she was at school. I don't know.
The Gregory is a great line. It's a great like one line way to describe the relationship, and that's nothing.
Exactly.
Marriage.
It wasn't really about, you know, love. He was that impressive guy.
Right. Seemed like a very good DNA donor.
Exactly. But not to pass. So later on, everyone is watching the moon landing. We have this moment of connection as everyone around the country is watching the exact same thing. And at the Francis residence, we've got Sean on the floor, thoroughly unimpressed. Yeah. And he has this cynical attitude of like, it cost us $25 billion to watch a guy put a footprint somewhere that no one's going to be while people are starving. Yeah. You know, what's the point? And, you know, Sally is still, I think, in this mode of, I want to be with this guy. I like this guy. I'm adopting his attitude because I want to be the guy that he wants. Or I want to be the girl that he wants.
Yeah.
I'm
glad they had that scene in there because there was a moment of wonder and hope and everything else. But you still had a segment of young people and teenagers who were still like, you know, we've got problems, real problems here back on Earth. So what's all this hoopla? But so you have the balance of like, wow, from the Bert Cooper all the way down to this young guy who was kind of like the full spectrum. That was kind of neat.
Yeah. Well, what I like about it is, you know, Don calls her. He calls the house and she talks to him and he's like, isn't that something? And she's like, not really. I mean, you know, people are going to be going there all the time while people down here are starving. And we're watching at home like, yeah.
am I the only one that is like secretly, I am like totally ashamed of where we are right now, space program wise.
Yeah.
It's just pitiful.
Yeah.
Like you look back at 1969, you're like, the ascendancy and the hope, and here we are now. Mm-hmm. Well, if the Russians give us a ride, we get to go. It's cool. And then maybe the guy down in Hawthorne, he can make a ship. But nothing.
Nothing.
We've got problems down here.
But, you know, Don's like, don't be cynical. Don't be that person. No one wants to be that person. And that's not how you really feel, is it? She's like, no, it's not how I really feel.
Yeah.
And she goes outside to smoke her cigarette, you know, where no one will judge her. And Neil, not really judging her, but just saying, you know, smoking causes cancer. She puts her cancer stick away. And she's like, well, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm looking at Polaris.
I got to tell you, my man's got that crazy telescope game. Come check out Polaris, baby.
Well, but that's the thing, is like you've got to me, it's a very interesting dichotomy because you've got Sean, who is the kind of person that a teenage anthropologist would marry.
Sure.
You know, good looking, you know, football player probably, who, you know, maybe isn't the sharpest tool in the shed, and maybe he doesn't have the best view of the world, who, a view that might be kind of poisonous to somebody who has, I think, a lot to offer, like Sally. And then you've got this guy, Neil, who, yeah, he's not the most athletic dude, but he is cute, and he is sweet, and he has optimism, and he's thinking about the larger world, and he doesn't want to listen to people droning on about something. He doesn't want to listen to the reporters. He just wants to look at the beauty of the world.
This is where Sally can make that left turn from Betty. Like, you know,
yeah.
Betty, maybe young Betty would have taken the you know, the teenage route, the hot guy. But she went out and talked to, you know, fell for the Polaris game. It's
yeah.
pretty strong.
And she made his decade. She made the entire 60s worthwhile to
yeah.
Neil in that one moment. What do I do?
What do
yeah.
I do now?
Again, like, yeah,
now game, you get your butt in the bed, Neil.
He had a mm-hmm. very strong game, but then like every man, he knew nothing to do.
Nope.
knew not what to do when it all happened. He's like, oh,
nothing.
Now what do I do?
Yeah. So who else is watching this landing? We've got the Burger Chef team of Harry and Pete and Peggy and Don watching the hotel room. Indiana is dry at night or on Sundays?
Sundays.
Sundays.
On Sundays. And so she only has two beers to offer, one for her, one for Don.
Yeah, the rest of you all are on your own.
Harry can't catch a break.
Yeah, Harry and Pete get no love.
Like, two beers?
Two beers?
Definitely not for
Suck
Harry.
It.
I love the array of reactions to the landing in this room because, like, Harry just looks stricken, like, oh God, it's all over. Like, there's like this, if you watch it back, he's just like, he looks like dread almost. I don't understand why.
Well, no, but he did stand up and was very happy that you know, when yeah. it happened. And I also, like, in that moment, I was very much transported back to that moment. Not that I was alive. I know I'm old, but I'm that old. But I was transported to that moment because you
were 15, 16?
Really, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You literally had no idea, like, if what's going to happen.
Yeah, is it quicksand?
Is it
solid?
Yeah.
Is it going to explode? Like, is it going to, like, what's going to happen? And so that drama was really felt there. It was really mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. And I love how it affected everybody. Most of which Bert, who says his lone bravo and then disappears from our screens. Roger is with Brooks and his grandson and Mona.
That's a great scene, by the way. That
yeah.
was terrific.
Yeah.
You know, the older folks stepping in and taking over and doing what needs to be done
mm-hmm.
whilst his daughter is still, I guess, in the commune.
Yeah, she's still at the commune.
But, meanwhile, back at the commune.
But Roger is kind of like I agree. He's taking care of business. He's having to spend time around his ex-wife. They don't get along, but they're united in the cause of giving their grandson, you know, a stable family.
He's got the helmet on.
Yeah, he's got the helmet on.
He's got the helmet on.
Yeah, and he's locked under Grandpa's arm.
Great.
And, you know, Roger gets a call. Oh man, you know.
Oh, word Stephen Lemieux doesn't like.
Exactly. Yes. Oh, swear word. And he goes back to the office, and we know what happens because he slides Bert's
yeah.
nameplate yeah. out from his door.
All very well done.
Oh.
Wait, who was Bert? Was Bert with, like, who?
Bert was with his maid.
His maid. Mm-hmm. Was he with
his housekeeper?
Was
he
with
yeah.
his housekeeper, or was he just with his housekeeper?
No,
I think that's like just. His
no,
family.
Bert.
I think that's the only person.
Yeah,
he
Bert
has
doesn't have a sex drive anymore.
Yeah.
It's I can't remember what the exact reasoning for it was, but there was actually a reason given
okay.
for why he just was not interested in those pursuits anymore.
Sure.
A few seasons back. In any case, Bert has passed on, and Roger's there. Joan comes and embraces him. How tragic. And then Jim comes in, and again, perhaps on the spectrum, he's like, I'm sorry,
death.
Roger, he was a giant. Anyway, firing Don.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Asperger's sliding scale.
So insensitive.
Somewhere on the spectrum.
Yeah. And, you know, Roger, of course, is aghast at this reaction, but of course, he also knows when he's been licked to a degree. Because they no longer have the votes to keep Don in the company.
Right.
Earlier that day, he and Bert had kind of had a last meeting where, you know, Roger was trying to convince Bert, you know, we got to get rid of Cutler. We got to do something. You know, let's make this work. And Bert's like, you know what, Roger, you have talent and you have ambition and you have charisma, but you're not a leader.
Yeah.
I'm a leader. and I care about my team. Don's a pain in the ass, but he's on my team. I'm going to take care of him. Jim is a leader because he has a vision for this agency. He knows where he wants to take it. You know, a computer and Harry Crane and surgically precise media buys.
Harry Crane's big line.
But, yeah. But he's not on my team.
No, he's not on my team. He talks about, they talk about Napoleon, which I saw, the Hollywood Reporter, they compared Cutler to Napoleon in this episode. Roger's understandably upset, and he's like, oh, so, you know, another cup of coffee, another piece of apple pie, and he walks right out, and he's really, really bothered by his last encounter with Bert. He calls Don, and he's like, you know, what is it about old men talking about Napoleon?
That's great.
It always means they're right about to die.
But I feel like, you know, with Roger, obviously, we know now, I mean, you know, Bert, very Yoda-like, very Obi-Wan Kenobi-like, gave Roger all the tools he needed to. In that last meeting, he gave him all the tools he needed to become the king, to become the guy. So he took, even though he was very distraught and walked out, like, he had, you know, he had all the tools, and he used those tools to go and make some moves.
Yeah. Which, like, do we think Roger can be a leader? Like, even with, like, a nice bit of sage advice, the guy has always been all potential and very little.
Well, let me ask you this, because, I mean, this whole season, we've seen that really dramatic, I think it's a dramatic shift from you know, Roger, the last few seasons, being basically the perpetual kid, you know, and just being never really taking responsibility for anything, up into his heart attack. You know, was that two seasons ago? He had a heart attack, and even that didn't really stop him.
Yeah.
You know, he still goes to, he's been going on this hippy-dippy trip for the majority of this season, right up until the time he goes to the commune with his daughter. And it seems to me, I think that becomes, that falling in the mud in his three-piece suit, I think, is a transitional point for Roger. You know, and he sees that he has to take care of his grandson. Mm-hmm. He has to do so much more than he expected to. And he's doing it.
I mean, go ahead.
And I think that in his self pity moment on the phone with Don, I'm going to lose you too. You know, that I think that was his, that was the, I want to say the final bounce right before he kind of becomes this guy he can be.
Sure.
You know,
I mean, to me, you know, obviously this now we know this entire series is about transformations, and we've seen transformation. We talked about the transformation of all the women, and we see Don going through this dramatic transformation, but and even Betty. But now, I mean, like, you know, it's Roger. Like, we haven't really seen Roger go through this transformation. I really do believe this is his moment. I agree with you, Joe, to come out of this other end as this new Roger. I mean, he's been through a bunch of ish, as we've seen through the entire 60s. I mean, look, the 60s is a transformative decade in general. So now that we know that this show is essentially about the 60s as well, it takes place in the 60s, that, I mean, I think that this is also Roger's transformation. I do believe he's going
to be. I trust Roger to be a leader and to step up and make it happen.
Okay.
I have positive things to say about Roger.
All right, fair enough. So in any case, Roger, you know, takes this moment, and he goes and he decides to make a move. He calls up Jim Erickson over at McCann, and he calls his bluff. You know, last week in the men's steam room, Jim was sniffing around about Buick, and Roger calls him on it. He's like, you know, Buick's going to come to us. These are the reasons why. So let's cut the crap and let's talk turkey. And Jim's like, okay, we want the team behind Chevy. And he's like, well, you're in the acquisitions business. How about this? You buy 51% of our company. We remain independently operated. You get all of that team, but we lose all this CGC garbage. And Jim's like, that almost works, but you need Ted Shaw, because GM sees Ted Shaw and Don Draper as one person.
One creative guy.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of, this is another evidence that Roger is like, got his mojo back and also ready to be a leader, because frankly those are the kind of old school backroom deal. That's how things get done. Like, we'll bring the guy in here for some coffee early morning and let's just cut all the crap. This is me and you. Let's talk this thing out and let's get it done right here at this table. And that was great. That's something that, like, only, I feel like only Roger Sterling could have done. You know?
I know, but I want more. As a person, you can't have, like, one shining moment a year. I mean, maybe we all do. Maybe that's actually a great. hitting record in terms of, like, you know, the grand scheme of actual life, yeah, versus Don Draper, who's hitting him out of the park on a regular basis, or Peggy, or somebody who's always on their game. He had his moment with GM, where he got them an audition with Chevy, you know, by hanging out at the airport, and he has this. You know, he gets maybe one a year, and I don't know if that's enough to be president of a company.
I wonder if this isn't part of it. You know, we've got, I know people that whose dads are super impressive alpha guys.
Yeah.
And are just legends in their field and paragons of everything. And I think that Rogers is, you know, if Senior was so much, I think there's a thing that can happen to you where you go, you know, I'm not even going to try that. I'm going to just be cool. I'm going to be clever. I'm going to be funny. I'm going to be charming. I'm going to have a great time. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be good at making money, maybe, but it's going to be kind of a casual thing. But as far as trying to be dad, I'm not even going to try. Don't need to try. Don't need to. Because if I compete with dad, I might lose. So, not going to do it. And so right now, it seems to me that he might be in a position to go, you know what? I don't need to compete with dad. I just need to make a decision here to do this.
I mean, not only that, I think there's something to be said about the fact that Roger Sterling is, I mean, he's already, like I said, he's has a company. He's helped build a company. I mean, he didn't just fall, you know, he didn't just walk into this job. So all he really has to do is every now and then remind people that he's Roger Sterling and remind us. So maybe that once a year for him is great. It's like, you know, I've already done it. I already have a great company, but just in case you forgot, I can still do this.
Right.
Or when we're about to go down, I'll step up. And that's all you really need a leader to do, is at that moment, instead of like, put your people in a position to win, and if something's going to go bad, you step up, you fix it. And that's what Bert Cooper did.
Yeah. Now, in a decidedly undone Draper move, at least the Don that we've come to know, who is all about his success and his image and his opportunity and his ability to sell something and his importance to the company. He goes to Peggy and he's like, listen, they're going to kick me out of this company. If I go in there tomorrow and I win Burger Chef, and I almost wanted him to say, and believe me, I would, you know, you would have nothing. I would leave the company and you wouldn't have that business. But if you win Burger Chef, then you get it, even if I'm not there. And Peggy's like, no way. No, I'm not going to. You've never even seen me pitch. You don't know how good it is. He's like, I've heard some things. And
I believe in you.
Yeah, I believe in you. And in just a few hours, they put together the most wonderful presentation. She just absolutely nails this scene. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it was carousel-esque. You know, it was very, very beautiful. And again, like, that was my second time actually had my little misty moment. And again, I'm not ashamed to admit it. But like, yeah, that beautiful pitch, and knowing how nervous she was and the way it was shot, that slow motion kind of like.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, it was pitch perfect in every way.
And Don's the only one paying her any attention.
Right, he's looking at her. And then that moment. And first of all, and shots to Don for giving a perfect Don Draper introduction.
Yeah,
what
setup.
A great introduction. I'm like, well, that steals her.
It was verbatim.
But he delivered it, because he's Don Draper, like, perfectly. Mm-hmm. But then that moment where, you know, she's doing well, and the guy's like, that's beautiful, you know? Don gives her that look. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
I was concerned for a second, because he's, like, shaking his head a little bit before he says it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, God, no. There's no way you can't not like this. Oh, good.
Yeah.
But it's, like, it's finally, she has arrived. He has accepted her not just as a protege, but as a partner on his level.
You know what was great about that pitch, at least from my point of view, is I'm watching the show, and my kitchen table is 6 feet from my TV. Mm-hmm. And when it is dinner time, the kids want no part of it, and it's a fight. And it was I'm hearkening back to when I was a kid, and there were four of us, and mom and dad, and it was a flippin' zoo. And there is something to be said for going outside and being in the well-lit place where you have to acknowledge each other. There's no distractions. It was really well done.
Polaris over the news, perhaps.
Yes.
I mean, and there's also just, again, the what a masterful pitch it was, because we know at the end of the day, what Burger Chef's a Hardee's. So, I mean, they made it seem like, you know, this magical place where family takes place, but it's a burger joint. So, just, again, what a masterful job of how it advertises and how it affects us. Because even you're like, yeah, I need a Burger Chef.
Yeah, right?
Like,
I sent you guys the email where we found somebody went out and found the actual Burger Chef that they did. It was in Rialto, was it?
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a part of me that wants to drive out there.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I'll check it out, man. What's going on?
Shout out to the Inland Empire for starting all the, you know, the burger chains, McDonald's and Burger Chef and In-N-Out. That's just
Inland Empire.
That's
so everyone returns home, and Don returns home to find Roger Sterling on his doorstep. How'd you get in here? Money. But he wouldn't let me in the door.
Oh, what a great line.
Great line.
In fact, that whole back and forth between those two guys, mm-hmm. it was just, you know, right. like, what are you doing? Like, that is great. Yeah. I loved it.
So Roger lays out this grand master plan. You know, like, McCann's going to buy us out. I know you hate McCann, but just listen. You know, and Don's like, why should I? Why should we do this? We don't want to be with McCann. We started this whole company to not be with McCann. Right. And, you know, Roger gets really emotional, and he's like, because we have to stop Jim Cutler from dismantling this agency. He won't be happy until it's him and Harry Crane and a computer.
Another great line.
And, you know, we have to save these people. We have to take care of these people. And, you know, is that Roger in that moment, you know, feeling misty over Bert? Or is he really, you know, thinking about all these other people? Is it maybe how his relationship has changed with his grandson and having to take care of him and being responsible for him and now feeling responsible for the other people? But I want to talk about how that affects Don, because Don has never been about the other people. He's been about his own personal success. He's been kind of about his kids, maybe. Not really. You know? But he was finally, in that moment, doing something completely unselfishly for Peggy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then having how that felt, and then realizing that he's kind of responsible for these other people, too. And he's going to do something for these other people. He still gets to do the work.
Yeah.
You know? It's not a perfect scenario. It's not his name on the door. But he gets to do what he loves, guaranteed, for 5 years.
With the people he loves,
right? With the people that he loves.
Another transformative moment. I mean, between, you know, the selfless moment he gave to Peggy, you know, even between that, you know, that phone call with Sally, so that relationship is, mm-hmm. is still there, to the moment with Peggy, to this moment with Roger, and then realizing that, you know, yeah, this is my family, after going through the horrible sort of divorce scene with Megan. And there's a lot happened in this episode to him.
And last episode he talked to Peggy about how he worries about how he'll end up alone and how he won't leave anything behind. So I think this whole, all of these selfless acts are him being aware that he has a legacy to leave and relationships to.
Well, you know, it is so interesting to me. It seems like so much of this show is the idea of your relationships and giving yourself to other people versus your work and yourself. And it seems like Don is so obsessed with himself and like, even when he shares with his kids, he's letting them see him, but it's not about them. It's still about him.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
And I think that what's fascinating to me is how we all associate so strongly with Don, and we all like Don so very much, but the character it's so rare that the character makes a selfless act, and it's so rare that we're actually talking about him. And it's interesting what that says about us as a culture and what it says about him and how he's become a hero to us almost, mm-hmm. when his involvement is so deeply with himself. And it's interesting to see Roger sitting with his grandson in a way that Don never really sat with his kids, and in the way that Don doesn't sit with his kids now.
Yeah.
And just that moment where it's not about you, Don, it's about these kids. And it's a totally different universe. Even his relationship with Megan, I'll always take care of you. That's more for him than her, and she knows it.
Yeah.
And you don't owe me anything. It's fine. Because it's not about her, and she knows that. It's about him.
And his guilt.
And
being
feeling
taken
good.
Care of is so much more than financial.
Absolutely.
You know, as a woman.
So those moments, but there's moments where he gets to take care of other people. They're more like Dick Whitman than Don Draper, because he took care of his, I can't think of the gal with the baby who's pregnant. What is her name?
His niece,
right?
Yeah, his niece. Stephanie. Stephanie Draper.
And, you know, he's on a plane. He's on his way. He's going to go. He's going to take care of Stephanie. You know, I mean, it's just interesting to see those moments and how glaring they are, but the overarching character is not. He's very selfish. He's very self-involved, mm-hmm. and we all respond very positively to that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I do want to, before we move on to this stuff, I want to just jump back and really just briefly touch on, because we didn't touch on Lou's brief demise, especially in contrast to Don.
You're a hired hand. I don't owe you anything.
I mean, that was so satisfying after seeing Lou just be such a button pusher the whole time, you know, and to have him go in there like, it was such a transition. It was such a thing in the end of an era. You know, we had a budget. It was the end of Lou's era. even came in like, look, man, like I built cigarettes. I built my whole career in cigarettes. Like Don Draper erases that one meeting, the Don Draper dinner show. He's like, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and go away now.
And it's in this false sort of sense that Lou had of like, I'm running this department, I'm the guy. You were never the guy.
Yeah, never no,
you're just
guy.
A dude. You're adequate, like he said. Mm-hmm. You're just a dude who's there. So Don's the real guy. Even Harry in that moment. Cutler in that moment had to sort of realize that look. You're just, get out of here.
That was my favorite thing Cutler did the entire episode.
It was great. Mm-hmm.
Like, you're a hired man. We don't owe you anything.
Yeah. Right. Whether that was, about, him getting his vision of Harry creating the computer, or whether that was just about, telling Lou, know who you are, it was very satisfying. And I felt a little bit sad for Lou, but at the same time, maybe he'll go
not
off.
Not in the least bit.
I feel sad for Lou for.
He'll go make, what's the comic book he does?
Oh, yeah. I don't even remember.
Scouts Honor.
Scouts Honor.
Now maybe this is a chance to go up and make Scouts Honor.
Yeah. So. I was like, I don't even care. That's like, I don't even care what it's called. That's how little I care about Lou.
Anyway, so go ahead. I'll bring up Lou.
Yeah. So I know it's okay. It's always good to laugh about Lou's demise.
Poor Lou.
Yeah. Don has an evening to think about this, and all the partners start gathering in Roger's office. Too late for Harry. He's not a partner. Not a partner.
Poor Harry.
He keeps trying to butt in on these partners' meetings. He's
so, partner meeting? Partner. Get out. Yeah. You're not a partner.
Yeah. Too late. You could have done it. So, Roger lays out this Grandmaster plan. Like, for $65 million, is what they think that we're worth. Jones 5% worth $1.5 million. And then I love Pete's ecstatic. I have 10%. Yeah. And immediately a lot of folks are on board. We're going to be independently operated. I'm going to be the president, and it's going to work out. And of course, Jim puts up a fight. This is a farce. This is again, dinner theater. Why should we care? We've got a good agency. And also Ted wants to retire and you need Ted. Don puts his vote in. He wants to go for it. And everyone stands to make a lot of money. And I love, Pete and Joan being like, how selfish, you're so selfish to Ted when they're just thinking about their money.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Joan's face lit up in a way I've never seen it light up before when she got wind of that money. It's like, oh my God, that's a lot.
Well, maybe she'll like Don more now that she's getting her money back.
I should hope so.
Yeah.
It was also very, at the end of the day, this kind of showed, who Cutler was, because it was, he was this big villain, but at the end of the day, he's just a businessman. It's like, it was never emotional for this guy. He had no real, either he did read Don the Riot Act. At the end of the day, he's like, well, okay, I went and only wanted a computer because it was the best way to do business. I only wanted Lou because he's adequate and we're trying to move forward. Now I have all this money. Okay, I'll do that.
It's a lot of money.
I'm not going to fight.
It's a lot of money.
He's not very emotional about these things,
And it's a beautiful moment. We finally reach an accord. Everyone's happy with it. Peggy comes up to Don and she lets him know we got Burger Chef. It would have been too saccharine, but I wanted to be like, you got Burger Chef.
Yeah.
It didn't need to be said. Right. And she's like, where are you going? He's like, I'm going back to work. Meanwhile, Roger relays the good and the bad news. And I assume they read the poem, Oh Captain, My Captain, as Jim Cutler wanted them to do. And, Don's about to go back to his office when he hears Bert Cooper call out to him from the stairs. And there he is in his socks in all of his glory.
Yes.
And he does this musical number where he sings the song All the Best Things in Life Are Free. Very, very timely because it talks about how the moon belongs to everyone. Now, I want to try to unpack what's going on here. Because some people personally feel, obviously on Mad Men, we've had dream sequences and fugue states, but they've been motivated by what's going on with a character biologically. It hasn't been completely separate from reality. There's no medical reason as to why Don should be having this vision of this musical number. So a lot of critics felt that maybe it was a little too... It was a little too indulgent. It
too
was,
cute.
It was sending off a beloved character and a wonderful actor and making reference to his past, experiences with song and dance. Robert Morse, has had his share of musicals. And, I personally took it as a combination of things, and I want to know how you all feel and whether or not you agree. I feel like it was Don allowing himself to mourn a friend and to grieve in a way, in an uncharacteristically not Don Draper-ish way, celebrating who Bert was, and also maybe having him realize for the first time that all the best things in life, you know, are free. That it's not about the money. It's not about prestige. It's not about necessarily, you know, being the biggest agency or getting a car or whatever. The opportunity to do what he loves is the most important thing in the world, even if it meant that he had to write tags and write coupons and do all of this, you know, potentially humiliating stuff to get back there. He now has the opportunity to do the thing that he loves. It doesn't matter how much money. Yes, he has enough money to live, but the opportunity to live out your dreams and to do what you love to do is maybe far more valuable and more fulfilling for a life than all the trappings of a family or of a businessman.
I loved it. I loved it. I mean, I get the critics who said, you know, maybe it was a little indulgent and blah, blah, and sort of off theme and off spectrum, but I loved it for every, I thought it worked within the context of the episode for Don to have this moment of, which you said, this moment of sort of seeing his own send off, if you will, to Bertram Cooper and also the message that song, The Best Things Life Are Free. But also, like, you can break the fourth wall or fifth wall, whatever it is, and also it's a great send off to Robert Morris, like you said, an old time song and dance man doing his thing.
Yeah, he won a Tony Award winner.
I love seeing that. I love seeing that, and I thought the number was affecting and beautiful, and I thought it was great the way it ended, and then Don sort of just sat on the desk and took it all in. I loved it. And again, my third time, I got misty.
You know, I gotta say, it's very rare for me to watch a musical number and not kind of want to throw things at the stage of the TI. I really have a tough time with musicals.
Really?
I really do, because a lot of times...
Man of the stage!
And my wife's a musical theater actress, but sometimes you watch them, there's just no reason for you to be singing. Just shut up and say it!
It's the whole point of music.
Right? I know. But I always feel the best work is when it's a motivated song. And this felt to me like it was needed, and it felt like it totally worked. Yeah. Like, okay, Don, you're back to work. You got all the stuff lined up. You got your marriage just fell apart again. And here's the truth from a guy who went through all of it. Did it all. I've been wealthy for longer than you've been alive. I've had money for longer than you've been on this planet. Here's the truth. And that it don't matter. That's not what this is about. Yeah. And you know, obviously it's not really Bertram doing it. It's Don having a self-realization, whatever. Wonderful. I thought it was terrific, and kudos to everybody.
I didn't love it, but I didn't mind it.
Okay.
I did read some critics that said they predict that it's going to become a recurring thing where Bert comes in and, like, does
no.
No.
If that happens, I swear I will not watch the show.
The magical Bert comes in.
I read that in several articles.
Don
and
Roger,
I'm just like,
you have to do Burger Chef.
Oh, boy.
People are predicting that, and I just really hope that does not happen.
No. I hope not.
What did you think of it?
I personally was surprised when I saw it. Upon the second viewing, I enjoyed it more because I felt like, okay, I can understand why this would be motivated by character and what he's getting out of it.
Right.
Right. And what that message means to Don. I appreciate that. Maybe it could have been done in a more subtle fashion or, you know, given us more of a reason for this thing to occur. It just kind of comes out of nowhere, which is uncharacteristic for the show. But, you know, Matthew Weiner makes these decisions, you know, for a reason. He wrote such a fantastic episode. Even my mild confusion at why it wasn't better set up doesn't mar what I thought was a really standout installment.
I got to say, the way he finished it was terrific. He closed the door to the office, and the mini Don walks right by.
Yeah.
And I was just like, coom, 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 reality's right back.
And then Don, I mean, we don't see it, but I'm pretty sure he starts to cry. It's perfect. All right. Let's go to predictions.
Yeah.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
I forgot the lights went off. Oh my God.
I'm having a seizure.
Wait a second.
You know, it's funny. We're four of the luckiest people in the entire world. And it's one of those things, you know, that the best things in life are free. We don't have to pay to review one of the finest series that's ever aired on TV. Sure. And we only have 7 episodes left, all of them airing next year. What do we want to see next year? I'll say mine right at the top.
Do it.
I'm all about seeing Don's existential journey come to a satisfying close. That's all I care about. Yeah. I mean, I would love to see Peggy reunite with her son or her daughter. We don't know if it was a boy or a girl. I don't remember. I would love to see Roger become the leader that he was always meant to be, but always squandered his potential to be.
You're stealing all of my predictions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm going to take them all.
Yeah. And I want to see Pete accept that, you know, he doesn't need to be married and he can be whoever he wants to be and that the office is where he belongs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go next, I guess. We know that, you know, Matthew Weiner pretty much said he blew his wad. No more bullets in the gun for season six. He thought season six was going to be the last season. So his plan for the finale was season six is the way he wanted it to end. So everything we're seeing in season seven is like, all right, we got to do something else. Extra.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah. So it's interesting. And he's doing a fantastic job in continuing the story that was meant to end in season six. So I'm concerned because I feel like this was such a wonderful ending and such a happy ending. This felt like, again, the end of the show. I'd have been very satisfied. What this back half is going to be, I feel like the other shoe has to drop, and I don't want to see it go too dark. I know we have to create more drama for them to get out of, but I don't want to see it go too dark. I mean, Matthew Weiner's from The Sopranos. I just want everyone to be happy. Mm-hmm. That's all I want.
So I want to see Don continue to be selfless and continue his legacy, and I want to see Peggy on top of everything happening.
Yes.
I want to see Don get involved in his kids. I want to see him, you know, care about the family he started. With this show, I almost don't like to predict anything. I love so much watching it, and I don't want to wax philosophical about it, but I do think it's the best show that's ever been on television. I think it every time and people are like, oh, it's about ad guys. People, we got friends that do it. Anyway, but it's so well done. I don't even like to predict. I like to just enjoy. That for me, I don't like to predict on the show.
Fine.
Don't throw things at me. Yeah. It's true.
I'll throw one last one out there. I'd love to see Betty and Sally mend fences. I know it's not likely, but I'd like to see it even for just a moment.
Sure.
All right. Now, to take us out at the end of this season, we have Bert Cooper singing All the Best Things in Life Are Free.
And Joe doing a dance.
Dance us out.
Hold on. Get up on the table.
The moon on high, they're great for you and me. Oh. Because they're free.
And
R.I.P. Burton Cooper.
Boom. Boom.
We'll see you all next year with the final seven episodes
next
of Mad
year.
Men. I know. It's so
Isn't that
long.
Crazy?
So long from now.
But, wait
a second.
Thank you all for joining us this season. It's been a real, real pleasure recapping these episodes for you. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed doing it. Joe Braswell, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. And
look at you, rocking. Look at that.
Yeah. Joe Filippo.
Sing it out. Sing yourself out.
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Filippo, JoeFlippo, and my website is josephsanfilippo.com.
All right.
And
Sterling.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Sterling Cates.
Okay. And you can find me on Twitter at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. You can find me on YouTube on SourceFed and SourceFed Nerd. And you can find me here on AfterBuzz TV this summer recapping AMC's new series, Halt and Catch Fire, Defiance, Under the Dome, Playing House, Marin. I'm probably forgetting something else. Thank you all. We'll see you next year. Good night.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.